We need to make sure that Donna's ready.
True.
Okay. All right, then. Hello, thank you. And I guess we're going to get this show on the road. So I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of June 17th, 2013. So thank you all for being here. First of all, I'd like to call for a moment of silence. And if you would all please rise for this. I'm going to try and talk into this microphone here. Our mayor has suffered a family tragedy, and so we would like to, or I would like to, dedicate this moment of silence to Andrew Peterson. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So, unfortunately, Debbie is not here, so you will be missing her eloquence, and you will have to suffer through me. So, next on our agenda is the flag salute, and I have asked Councilmember Nichols to please lead us up and down. This is how it's going to be tonight. Sorry, folks. So, Councilmember Nichols, if you will please lead us.
Yes, if you'll join me, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, if our city clerk would please do our roll call.
Here. Here.
Here.
Here. Now we'll move on to closed session announcements.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On Monday, June 3rd, after meeting in closed sessions regarding three items, one being labor negotiations with all groups, second one being property negotiations on the Crown Castle deal, and the third one being property and right-of-way negotiation with Digital West Network. Council reconvened into open session, and there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Thank you. At this time, the City Council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day.
Yes, Mayor Pro Tem, if I might. I would like to ask that we pull item 5 from the agenda and reschedule that for a future meeting. And I would suggest the second meeting in July would be appropriate. There are a number of questions that in reviewing the staff report and the information included with the staff report, it has raised in my mind a number of questions relating to this issue. And I would like to ask that this be pulled and rescheduled at a later time, either.
Thank you. That's good information. Appreciate that.
So I did have one question on that, if you don't mind. So to our city attorney, I noticed in some of the background materials there appears to be some legal wrangling between two of the proponents. Does that need to be resolved before we move forward with this? Or obviously it doesn't have a direct effect on our ordinance, but would it be more appropriate to let them resolve their differences first before we take action on this item?
If you're asking for my opinion as to whether or not we should allow them to resolve it, I don't know if that really timing-wise is something that would peril the ordinance. The information, whatever information with regard to that issue the council wishes to receive, it's tangential to the ordinance, but obviously it's something that we can discuss. I think would be appropriate to give us that direction when we get to that item in the agenda.
Okay. All right. So then I guess we can determine this when we get to this item. Mm-hmm. Well, unless you want to make a discussion,
I support Ms. Councilmember Nichols' motion.
I had some questions on it, too. It seems like it needs a little bit more finessing. There's parts of it, and I had some questions on it. I'd be willing to pull it to date certain, maybe July 15th or August 5th meeting, and that way if there's any members in the audience that are here right now that and we do end up pulling it, then we can make that decision now, and they won't have to wait.
Well, I guess we can... What I would prefer to do is when we get to that item, we would open the discussion,
okay,
and then continue it so we don't have to renotice.
Okay.
That's what I prefer to do if my colleagues agree, rather than having to renotice. But we've pretty much said that's probably what we're going to do. So if folks are interested in this item, we are going to open it. If my colleagues agree, mm-hmm, most likely, though, we will close it and we'll continue it to another date.
Will we move it up in the agenda? I'm sorry.
Well, it's fifth.
It's item
it's,
five.
It's right there. We're almost there.
Will it then require...
Maybe. We don't know for sure with this meeting, but...
Excuse me. Will it then require a motion at that time to carry it forward?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All righty.
Madam Mayor, if I could, I just wanted to point out that along with item 13, I wanted to correct something that's the response to the grand jury. I wanted to let you know that you actually have 90 days to respond. That takes you, I had said in the report, 60. You actually have another 30 days. I know that was an item that Mayor Peterson had some interest in. So if you wanted to, you could continue that item until July 15th.
Thank you. I was going to go there. If
yes,
is there anyone else who wanted to talk about any other items on the agenda? Okay. I would like to ask that the council allow us to postpone that until Mayor Peterson can be here. I know she's very interested in this item, and she had a lot of questions and a lot of comments. So if
I agree.
If you folks,
I have no problem with
that. Okay.
Yep.
All right, then. So would we do the same thing here, then?
No, it's not a public hearing item. We can simply move it to the agenda.
Okay. So that's what we'll do, then. So
okay.
Do we need to vote on that?
Yes. You'll need to adopt the agenda as amended.
Okay. Very good. So are the
I would make that motion.
Okay. Any other discussion, then, about the agenda?
No. And I'll second the motion.
Okay. All right, then. So we have a motion and a second to accept the agenda as proposed with...
As amended.
As amended with the 13 being...
Continued
to
July 15th.
Oh, we're going in with a date certain?
And before the vote is taken on the motion, one more item, and I apologize for not speaking up sooner, but the second item on the closed session... based on the mayor's absence, staff would recommend that item is pulled as well off the agenda till the next meeting.
Very good.
I would accept that amendment.
Okay.
I'll accept it also.
Okay. So the motion maker and the motion seconder. All righty then. So is this a roll call or?
Voice vote.
Just a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Alrighty then. So let's get to the good part, and that's ceremonial. So we'll start with certificates of appreciation for our 2013 Spring Garden Tour participants. Our Parks and Recreation Program, Kathy Petker, and Recreation Coordinator Nora O'Donnell are going to carry this.
Each for creating beautifully landscaped yards, for using drought-tolerant plantings, and creative ideas for solving unique gardening dilemmas, and through their hard work, thereby beautifying the city. It also gives others the chance to learn about different gardening techniques and improve their own outdoor spaces. What's best about this event is the way it brings the community together and enables residents to share their creativity and hard work with their neighbors. We had a beautiful sunny day with guests from all over the Central Coast and from out of the area. Nominations for the gardens were accepted throughout the middle of May. Some were self-nominated and some were nominated by other residents. Each commissioner was also responsible for choosing gardens for the preview tour and then working at the sites of the chosen gardens, in some cases working at two sites for the chosen gardens because they were right across the street, so it worked out. This helped to free up the homeowners to answer questions and extol the virtues of their gardening space. There were some wonderful gardens to look at again this year, including the city-sponsored demonstration garden at Ramona Garden Park, which is planted with many varieties of low-water and drought-tolerant plants and maintained on a volunteer basis by Nicholas Ambrise of Mission Pacifica Landscape Development. So I'd like to ask Dee Santos, our Parks Recreation Commissioner, to come up, as well as Heidi Boatman, our Vice Chair, and Debbie Johnston, who's one of our commissioners. And I don't see Harold or Ellie, right? I'm not missing them.
It's a meeting.
Okay, we want to recognize the homeowners. So I'll call out their names and tell you a little bit about their garden as they shake hands and present the certificates. So I know the Richard and Shannon Orton are not in attendance tonight, but they had a beautiful garden on Saratoga Avenue. Next up, I have Teresa Drew. Are you there? You are. There you go. Teresa's garden was lush and obviously created by someone with a love of the outdoors. Every inch of the space was utilized to showcase trees, flowers, a large staghorn fern, interesting and fun stepping stones. Teresa created a fun place not only for the family, but for their pet bunny and turtle as well. I thought the turtle was fake. Can you go ahead and stay up there? On the other side of them would be good. Thanks.
Group shot.
Yeah, we're going to get a group shot. The next up is Diane Smith of Saratoga Avenue. You feel like you're stepping into a Mediterranean villa in her yard. It's beautiful property. The entrance is flanked by two beautiful iceberg roses, succulents, and several kangaroo paws. The back flagstone courtyard is charming with ivy-covered walls, a fountain, and it's a perfect setting for entertaining. And Paul Thole. His wife, Sue, was unavailable to be here tonight. So we want to thank them both, but he gets to get the certificate. It's a meandering pathway through a variety of succulents and California natural drought-resistant plants. They all grace the front of this lovely home. The backyard slate patio has a glass windbreak that makes outside dining enjoyable throughout the year, and a large staghorn fern perches on the back fence with the lawn bordered by attractive box hedge. It's a beautiful And Barry and Kathleen Rogers. Kathleen's going to come up. You don't want Barry to come? this is a beautifully landscaped with lots of succulents mixed in with flowering annuals and perennials. It leads up to a very charming custom craftsman home. You stroll down the side yard and take in the sweet smell and beauty of the honeysuckle and bougainvillea vines. And the backyard and comfortable patio was surrounded with gorgeous blooming trumpet and morning glory vines. And I loved your umbrella. That was my favorite part. Over the table. The Hernandez family and Dennis and Angela Jacobson, are you here? I think they said they couldn't make it as well. Next up is Tony and Terry Agrusa. And they were up for consideration a couple years ago and couldn't make it, so we're glad they joined us this year. The sweet sounds of water in bear country. That's what we thought of when we saw their yard. This quaint private backyard is made for comfort and entertaining. A cottage-type shed complements the setting with a center fire ring and three large carved wooden bears reminiscent of Disneyland's Bear Country Jamboree. A fun place. Mrs. Glenn. This is Mr. Glenn's House of Ladies Fashion. Mrs. Glenn has created a beautiful garden next to her work environment. And it's a loving work in progress, she calls it. And it's her dream to grin, as well as her son, Tink, who helped set up and take down. And then as a nice little addition, there was a gentleman playing tennis across the street that she roped in to help take down the... So she did a great job. She said, hey, you, come here. Yeah. Did you want to say something?
One day I went into Ron's nursery and I saw this piece of iron, beautiful ironwork, and it got me into real trouble because I didn't know what to do with it. And I thought I would put it on Grand Avenue. And I little did I know that that was going to be a back-breaking job from then on. And many people have participated, donating plants and flowers. Had two young men, Tim Lombardini, donated lots of work. And Brian, I don't know his last name, he moved to San Francisco, but he did a lot of work. And so I appreciate the young men who helped. And someone donated tomatoes, and I've never grown big tomatoes, and they're doing well. Be careful when you go by, because I'm looking forward. They're yellow now. They'll be red soon. But what I've done, I have made my sister is the artist. She came. We had an art in the garden May 18th, and we had about 30 participants from Roy Grandy and this area. And my sister did the painting, and I did the poem for it. And so we've collaborated and tried to make something nice for Grover. We believe in Grover. I've only been here 64 years. Did I get this because I was here so long? I'm wondering about it. Anyway, I have these cards at the store. I had them made up. And then the poem reads, "There's a place along the ocean where the sand dunes meet the sea. White gulls fly against the clouds and call, 'Come home to me.' Mountains in the distance frame the surf as it breaks free, joining wild and restless waters in that ever-changing sea." That's my question. And then I have these made up for the women and the men. Gizmo has, they have their shirts. Aurelia has their shirt. We have our shirts now. And also the mugs are down at my store. So a nice plug for me. Thank you very much.
Let's get a group shot of everybody. I think he wants to say something.
Okay.
Hold up your certificate.
While they're getting organized, I just want to thank all of you for allowing us to use your homes, and it was so nice. So many people come and they say, "What does Grover have?" We've got beautiful gardens and beautiful homes. And now that Cynthia has her garden and her T-shirts and stuff, maybe the rest of us businesses can get involved in that. And I think they had their first business cash kind of deal that you
cash
could...
Mob.
Cash mob, that's what it was. Thank you. At Ron's this last week. So maybe we can continue that. And, of course, we have competition on both sides of us. So, Grover folks, let's get busy. It's time for us. Okay? And thank you, all of you. And if next year, if you have a good garden or whatever, please allow us or call us or whatever, and we'll go take a peek. Thank you.
Thank you all. It was the best yet. All righty then. So now we'll move on to item 2, the proclamation declaring July 1st through 7th, 2013 as Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes Access for All Week. And I do know that we're going to have some public comment as well after this. So.
And I see that Craig Angelo is in the audience to accept one of the proclamations. And then also I see several members of the SVRA are here to accept the other one. So whoever's willing and able to come forward at that time. I'm happy to read this proclamation from the City of Grover Beach proclaiming, declaring July 1st through the 7th, 2013 as Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes Access for All Week. Whereas the City of Grover Beach in 1992 officially changed its name from Grover City to Grover Beach to emphasize its beachfront location, whereas the Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, the SVRA, provide the beachfront from which the city obtains its coastal identity. And whereas Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes SVRA, $160 million in economic benefit and creating hundreds of jobs benefiting businesses and residents in the city of Grover Beach and the surrounding communities. And whereas the Friends of Oceano Dunes is a 501c3 California not-for-profit public benefit corporation and has embraced the phrase access for all to represent the desire for all people to enjoy access to Pismo State Beach and the Oceano Dunes SVRA. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim July 1st through the 7th, 2013, as Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes Access for All Week. And it's been signed by our Mayor Pro Tem, Acting Mayor Karen Bright.
So thank you.
Would you come forward?
I'm sorry.
Everybody has to have a picture.
I'll do the short guy in the middle.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's all right. I'd like to say a few things. As you know, my name is Craig Angelo. I'm here today representing Friends of Oceano Dunes. Most of you know me know that I've grown up here on the Oceano Dunes and recreated with my family for years. We've also owned a ATV rental business for many years on the beach. Also, I'd like to point out that announce that I just recently was appointed to the board of directors for Friends of Oceano Dunes. So it's this is my first official duty as a board member. Although I'm new to the board, I have personally known and worked with Friends of Oceano Dunes for many years. Friends of Oceano Dunes has over 28,000 supporters. That's almost the same population as our three beach communities, Oceano, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach. They represent businesses, environmentalists, equestrian people, campers, fishermen, families, and the off-road enthusiasts who enjoy the benefits of public access. Friends is a 100% volunteer organization. No one takes a salary from us. Friends is very happy that Grover Beach is declared the July 1st through the 7th for Access for All Week for the Pismo State Beach and the Oceano Dunes. Friends would like to continue to partner with Grover Beach and the surrounding communities to ensure the continued access for all. Many times Friends of Oceano Dunes is known only for its lawsuits that is filed to protect and continue access to the beach. However, they've done much more. For instance, I have personally worked with Friends when they bused approximately 50 students over here from the Central Valley, all disprivileged children. They spent a day on the beach and also got some time riding ATVs. For many of these kids, it was the first time that they'd ever seen the ocean or felt the sand between their toes. Friends has donated thousands of dollars towards helping the volunteer patrol program and purchasing critical safety equipment to the state park. Friends has chaired an annual California coastal cleanup for many years from its beginning and continues to support it every year. As you can tell, Friends of Oceano Dunes have accomplished much since the founding in May of 2001. On behalf of Friends of Oceano Dunes, we'd like to say thank you for declaring July 1st through the 7th as Access for All Week for Pismo State Beach and Oceano Dunes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. Hello, I'm Brent Marshall. I'm the district superintendent for Oceana and Dunes. On behalf of State Parks, I would just like to say thank you very much for the well-thought-out and kind words. I think you can summarize that as a diverse recreational opportunities, and I'm very proud to be able to be a small part of a beach community and a state park system that embraces all types of different recreation. One great example of that will be our junior lifeguard program, which we're starting for the first time here this year, and there's still spots as well. So if you're like some of my friends and realize that your children just got out of school and you're wondering what do we do now, you can go on to California State Parks website.
It's nice to know that the people of this community elect council members who have a depth of wisdom and experience and can guide our community effectively. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Again, it's nice to see you here. I'm a member of the TRT, which is the technical review team. Only a few, or probably a handful of people in this audience and among you who know what that is. That's a team looking at habitat conservation and programs in the dunes and literally the fight over whether the dunes will remain open to various recreational uses and other uses. There are people out there who want to see the dunes closed down entirely. There are people at the extreme edge who don't even want people in the dunes. And there are others, of course, at the other edge who want to continue the access that we have historically enjoyed in the sand dunes. And you have effectively just passed a proclamation deciding that June 1st through 7th is Pismo State Beach and Oceana Dunes access for all week. And basically that's why I'm in front of you today, because I want to continue to see access for all to the dunes, because it means so much, not just to Grover Beach, but the entire South County. I am your TRT representative to the California Coastal Commission, to Parks and Recreation, California Parks and Recreation, to California Fish and Game. We've been meeting for 10 years, one decade. That's a long time. That's a long time to battle this whole thing out. We have people who are, again, on the program is to continue access to the dunes and continue recreational activities and vehicular activities, if there are those who want little or no activities. It's not an easy place to find a compromise, and we've been doing it for a long, long time. The LeGrand track, which is 586 acres, I believe, and belongs to the county, I think is critical to keeping the dunes recreation area open. And by recreation, for my purposes, I'm talking about equestrian use and vehicular use. When I first came to Grover Beach, it was 1972, and I used the dunes for as many purposes as I could find. I used the beach for fishing, I used the beach and the dunes for running, and I used them for off-road with my motorcycle and my vehicle. So those days, you could ride all the way down, it's approximately 13 miles, to what we call Devil Slide, or Point Sal, as it's more officially known. That was so much fun. It was about 25,000 acres. Think about that for a minute. 25,000 acres to recreate in. We now have 1,500 acres. 1,500. That's a dramatic difference between 25,000 acres and 1,500. You take the LeGrand track out of that, and you're down to 1,000. If that happens, or if people want to close the dunes down to recreational activity, South County will lose approximately $2.5 million that are left here annually in our businesses. If that money isn't left here and turned over through other businesses, do you want me to shut up? It's just the paranoia. And I do have to ask you for a couple of more minutes if I might have that.
Okay, we'll give you two more minutes.
Okay, try and make this quick.
Thank you.
You can imagine the cascade of disaster that will happen if all of the tourists aren't coming here to camp on the beach with their families and their children and their relatives and friends, and if they don't have access to the beach and the dunes for their recreational activities. It will be a cascade of disaster. It'll roll through this community like a tidal wave. Businesses will fail. Then there's no question about it. And with those businesses that fail, there will be bankruptcies. And with bankruptcies, there will be home foreclosures. It is critically important to this community in particular, and South County in general, that access to the dunes for all remain open. I have a lot of other things to say, but I'll concede to the 2 minutes, and perhaps I can speak again to this issue at another time. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. We have another speaker on this issue, Andrea Seastrand.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. As a Grover Beach resident, I'm very pleased that you were able to pass this resolution in support of beach access to the Pismo Beach State Park as well as the Oceano Dunes. You know, it's been very many years that the Seastrand family has been involved with the Oceano Dunes. My husband was the assembly member in the 80s, and I was in the early 90s, and I have recently visited the park and how far we've come. They've done a great job. I applaud the state parks for the great improvements they made from those 80s and the 90s. They've come a long way. So thank you.
Thank you. Laura Mordaunt? Did I butcher that too terribly, Ed?
That was great. Well, this is a great topic for me. I live in San Luis Obispo County area, and I had the opportunity to be on the same tour that Ms. Seastrand was on, and I was so impressed because I've been here 8 years and never had the opportunity to go out there because I don't ride an ATV. And so with this tour, I was so amazed. I even got a complimentary exfoliation treatment on, you know, I mean, that's pretty cool. But I got an opportunity to firsthand, and if I don't know, since you all live in Grover Beach, if you've been to out there, as far as we were able to go, it was amazing. I mean, I didn't even know. I felt like I was maybe in desert area. I was just surprised at the various terrains through that whole tour. And the information we were given by the state park personnel was wonderful. So if people haven't been there personally, I think they should not vote on this subject when it comes up at the APCD, you know, the Air Pollution Quality Control Board. I think every member on that board should attend. They should have every planner, anybody who touches this subject needs to be there, because you can see for yourself. I know that there's expensive equipment that is going to be providing data on the particulate, but I think that my senses provided me with as much data as I think I need on the subject. So without that personal investment, without seeing exactly what's there, with no vehicles, what the wind does, without any vehicles, I think it defies logic and reason. You have to have the experience. And since we live here, and anyone who's interested in this subject, I talk to the park and recreation, the state beach officials, and get a tour and learn for yourself. Do not allow someone else to tell you what's going on out there. You can find out personally, and I'll tell you, you will forever be changed, because the decision is obvious once you've been there. So, and what an incredible facility. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one other. I have a speaker slip that doesn't have a subject attached to it. Linda McClure, were you going to speak to this issue? Okay.
I gotta get used to filling those out. I'm Linda McClure, and I'm here on behalf of Grover Beach United, American Property Services, Mongo Saloon and Restaurant, Friends of Grover Beach, just to name a few. Just this week alone, my company made 2 sales because we brought tourists in that were staying at the beach. Without the beach, I'd be out of business. I've been here for a long, long time, and I don't plan on going anywhere, as you know. Grover's my home, and I plan to make it my home until my time comes. Over the years, we've had multiple attempts to take the rights away regarding our beaches. It's time it stops, and we start to work to spend the money and time that's being wasted to take away all of our rights and support the Friends of Oceano Dunes and embrace their phrase of access to all. The resolution that you've adopted is wonderful. It's about time that the people that are the majority who want to see those dunes kept open are actually heard. And I think that Grover's taken a huge step today by doing what you've done. If you take a look at how many people have been here just last weekend and who will be coming on the 4th of July weekend and many, many, many other weekends during the summer and even during the winter, Mr. Keith is totally right. We will go out of business. There will not be a Grover Beach. There may not be an Arroyo Grande and Oceano. Pismo will probably always survive to a certain extent and stuff, but it's sure going to make a huge change. So I've been down there a lot. Haven't been down there probably in 4 or 5 years because I work too much, but it would be a really nice getaway for the day. And if you listen to what the people say...
Strand, if you'll come up to the dais for just a moment. There's really something left undone here. And Andrea is rather modest. But the truth is that Andrea was our state assembly representative and did a marvelous job for us all. If there's a mother of the Hotel Convention Center, it's Andrea. I'm not stretching the truth. She carried the bill forward. There were a number of people who... the mother of, and truly, she is modest, and the truth is that without her, without her knowledge, her insight, and having carried the bill, we would not have a 50-year lease that starts when the hotel conference center opens, not 20 years ago when we started all this. So I thought it was important to this council and the audience listening
that
they know who Andrea is today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you, Peter. I'm sorry I gave you such a hard time.
I expected.
All right. I appreciate all the comments. We now have we're moving into our presentations, I believe. Yes, we are. So, not a problem. I appreciate it. I was going to say, it's going to take a village to run this meeting because I haven't done this in a while, so I appreciate everyone's assistance. God knows I need all the help I can get. So we're going to now move on to item 3, and this is a presentation by the Economic Vitality Corporation regarding the potential regional economic benefits from the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center project and what could be a better segue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, chairs, our council members, and city staff. I would like to personally just acknowledge the fabulous work that Mayor Peterson has done representing the city on the EDC board, and my heart really goes out to her family. It's a terrible thing. I'd like to just, for the benefit of the public who may not be familiar with the Economic Vitality Corporation, what we do, I'd like to provide a brief overview about the EVC, talk a little bit about the economic strategy, which was the impetus for the economic analysis program, and then move forward with the outcomes of that.
Okay.
So the EVC was established as a nonprofit in 1994. We are a public-private partnership funded about 50-50 from our local governments and our private industry. We have a 33-member board. It's a very diverse group of which Mayor Peterson takes one of our chairs. And it provides really a diverse level to inform our activities moving forward. So in 2009, as a result of a discussion between some of our board of supervisors, some EVC board members, and some community leaders, we realized that we really needed to have a better understanding of our local economy. Actually, that's the wrong presentation.
And while that's coming up, I have a really unusual question. Okay. I didn't catch your name.
Christine Rogers with the Economic Vitality Corporation.
Sorry,
I'm the program manager for the Economic Strategy Project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There we are. So what the EVC primarily does is support economic initiatives that are important to the city and then also to the economy overall. Just to provide a few examples of that, working to restore the airport service, which we know is so important to tourism, working to enhance broadband infrastructure, to support technology innovation and entrepreneurship, making sure that our local business owners have access to the resources that they need to continue to grow and thrive, access to capital, market studies, the information that they need to really be successful. So as I said, in 2009, we realized that we really needed to have a better understanding of our local economy. The Economic Strategy Steering Committee was formed. They worked with Collaborative Economics. It's the first project of its type. It was funded both through public and private sponsorship. It was an in-depth assessment of our economy, looking at what is our economic base historically, and then also a significant amount of stakeholder engagement to make sure that we are hearing from the business community what they needed to continue to be successful. It looked at all three legs of the stool, both economic, social equity, and environmental. And, you know, the key thing is that it was developed for and continues to be driven by the business community with the support of our local governments. As far as the economic analysis went, the types of things that were assessed included the occupations in our different industry clusters, the type of earnings that we see here, the federal earnings, that's money coming into the area, and then also the status of our industries. And when we're talking about the cluster status, it's really how do our industries look in comparison to the rest of the nation. So in looking at this graph, the size of that bubble tells you, you know, how many businesses are in that particular industry. On the horizontal axis, we see the job growth, how fast are they growing in comparison to other industries in the state. And then on the vertical axis, how is that the new business growth panning out. And so we can see here that there are primarily six clusters in the period between 2008 and 2011. The business design and construction cluster, in developing the economic strategy, identified a priority outcome, encouraging analysis of economic impacts for local projects and policies. As a result of those discussions, we began working with the County of San Luis Obispo, and they directed staff to incorporate a business impact statement into the staff reports for discretionary permit projects. That was primarily a qualitative discussion. And so based upon input from the cluster industries, the EVC continued to work with the county to see, is there a way that we can integrate some quantifiable metrics in relation to beneficial economic effects? And based upon those discussions, we worked with the county. We did develop an infrastructure that was presented to the Board of Supervisors. And in July and August of 2012, they provided the EVC with a grant for a one-year pilot project to continue to develop that structure into the economic analysis program. So the pilot project was envisioned to occur in two phases. Each phase will analyze four projects. It is a voluntary countywide program. Eligibility is based upon having greater than 4 units of residential or greater than 10,000 square feet of commercial space. And what the program primarily looks at are beneficial economic impacts, community benefits such as perhaps providing infrastructure beyond the needs of that project, community parks, and the things that are going to be of long-lasting benefit to the community, and then also how these projects align with specific economic initiatives that are being pursued through the economic strategy project. Our milestones, as you can see, we are right on time, which we're very pleased about. We did go through the project selection for phase one. We worked with those applicants, did the economic analysis, worked through the draft report process, both with the county and with the applicants, and presented those outcomes to the Board of Supervisors last month. In moving forward with phase two, we will incorporate the input that we've received from both the county and the building design and construction cluster members and refine the program and move forward with phase two following that same structure and hope to be able to report those final outcomes in July or August of this year. And at that time, the county will decide if they're going to formally implement the program. As far as the participants go, we worked from a list of potential projects that was provided to us by the county and also by other stakeholders. We reached out to each of those project proponents and did succeed in identifying four projects to move forward. Our goal was to have a diverse range of projects, both in geographic location, in the type of projects, and the size of those projects. So the data center expansion in San Luis Obispo with Digital West Networks was one of our projects. Of course, the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center, I would like to thank Bruce Buckingham for being willing to work with us, and he was wonderful to work with. Hillside Terrace, which is a multifamily project in Napomo of rental units, and then the Vintage Homes project in the city of Atascadero, which is also multifamily for sale units. As far as the economic analysis process, the online economic modeling tool that we're using is MZ Analyst 3.0. And that program allowed us three potential direct inputs for our modeling. We could use the value of sales, the earnings, annual earnings, or the number of jobs created. And so when we were evaluating the process, we really felt that the applicants that we were working with were more well-versed in identifying a construction cost estimate and annual sales revenue than really understanding exactly how many jobs is this project going to create and what type of salary levels would we expect from that. And so in moving forward with the project, we are using sales into an industry as our direct input. And so as far as what that data looks like, we work with the applicants to define a construction cost estimate and then their annual sales revenue estimate. And that becomes the direct inputs into our process. As far as how the process looks, we work with the applicants during the data collection. We then take the information that they provide us with, and we do some internal due diligence. For the construction cost estimates, we are working with a program that through RS Means. It's called the CostWorks program. It's also an online economic modeling tool and allows us, based upon project specifications that are provided by the applicant, such as where the site is located, how many square feet, one or two stories, what's the wall frame construction type, you know, specifics about that project are then input into the model, which provides us with a fairly detailed construction cost estimate by division. It's really amazing how detailed the estimates are. What we found is that those estimates are coming within 10 to 15% of what the applicant has been estimating. And so the value of that, they're comfortable moving forward with the CostWorks estimate, and it provides us with a much more conviewed and approved. And that is the same process that we put Bruce Buckingham through. Looking at the Grover Beach Lodge project, for the construction cost, as I said, we did use the CostWorks program. That was based upon the square footages that were defined also in the David Tausig report. And for the sales revenue, again, we used their square footage estimate in developing our direct data inputs. And so what you see here, oh, I'm sorry, we had a, that 15,000 should be underneath the other numbers, or the 15 million. So you see at the top the construction cost estimates for each component of the hotel and the hotel or the sales revenues for each component of the hotel. We did model each of those uses separately, and so when we're looking at the outcomes, you'll be able to clearly define what effects apply to which use. This gives you an idea of what the report outputs look like. What we're looking at here is the overall regional impact for the construction investment. So that $13,687,500, that is the construction cost estimate for the hotel. What this is analyzing is how those dollars invested into the commercial and institutional building construction industry are going to impact your local economy. This is actually the, in looking at the report outcomes, this is the most accurate outcome when you're looking at it as you start breaking it down by industries because of the multipliers and the rounding effect and fractional impacts, you know, you lose some of those impacts. So it still provides a good idea of how those sales are going to be allocated across industries, across initial, direct, indirect, and induced impacts, but it's not quite as accurate as what you see here in the overall regional impact. And so Here we see the construction impacts based upon an investment of $13,687,500 into that industry. We saw an increase in earnings of $8,227,778 based upon a multiplier of 1.26. 134 jobs based upon a multiplier of 1.52, and then those jobs are at an average earnings of $61,305 per year, which is the average for that industry. I'm not going to go through the others. They, you know, it's essentially calculated in the same manner. When we're looking at our sales, this again, it's an investment into the hotel and motel industry of $5,373,000,000. And the return on that is an increase in earnings of $2,130,694 at a multiplier of 1.53, an additional 20 jobs at an average earnings per job of about $30,000. Here you see the way that the model demonstrates how those beneficial economic effects are distributed across the different industries and based upon the type of impact and the extent of that impact. So in looking at jobs here, and this report is provided both looking at jobs, it's provided looking at earnings, and then also looking at sales, so that you can see how those effects are allocated across your industries for each of those multipliers. So here essentially we see that there were 102 direct jobs into the construction industry, or initial jobs. The direct jobs then are those industry transactions, so that would be subcontracts directly into the other industry, which in this case is manufacturing, retail trade, professional and scientific and technical services. Then those indirect impacts, which are a result of supply chain, you know, of satisfying those contracts with services and supplies, and then the induced impacts, which are related to all of those employees now working and living here in our community. We also are provided with some information regarding the types of occupations that we're going to see. For this type of construction, we see primarily, of course, construction and construction occupations, and then management. We see some retail, some health. It shows you how those occupations are going to be experienced by your local economy, and not also the demographics, which age groups are going to be affected by these additional jobs. And again, you'll see this information for your sales and your earnings. In looking at the overall impacts, we see that during construction, it's anticipated that 155 jobs will be created, with 139 additional jobs through operation. Again, we're looking at the annual sales revenue based on an annual basis.
Yes.
As far as next step for the economic analysis program, we would love to hear any beneficial comments you may have about how we can improve the reporting or the process. We are, as I said, going to provide the final aggregate outcomes to the County of San Luis Obispo in the July-August timeframe, with hopes that the program will be formally implemented. We are also working with some of the cities to provide economic analysis services to them, so that is an option, as well as you know, if we continue to move forward the program, looking at the aggregate information overall, how do we then take this information and get meaningful data about trends for the industries, about how our jobs are created, which types of development projects create which types of jobs, and just really become better informed about how our local economy is performing. And with that, I am available for any questions. I thank the City of Grover Beach for your support of the Economic Analysis or the Economic Vitality Corporation, which makes this type of work and these projects possible. We appreciate it more than you will ever know. And again, for participating in our pilot project so that we could vet the program.
Thank you. Questions from this side over here?
I do have one or two.
Okay. So,
and thank you for that presentation. A lot of information to capture and glean and so forth. So my questions will make sense. on one of your slides, it was, I think it was 15 of 24, you had a discussion about the changes in earnings through the construction of the hotel. So I'm assuming that's labor earnings, and so that's not material earnings?
No, those are wages. Those are salary and wages.
Okay, gotcha. So there will be some, obviously, benefits to the community through material costs and transportation costs and so forth, but that one is specifically to labor and wages.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. And then my only other question would be, where do you foresee the most benefit from this information happening? And the thought that popped into my brain was using it as a potentially a marketing tool for, I happen to sit on the Visits San Luis Obispo board, and possibly utilizing this information in the marketing efforts, or Pacifica using it in their marketing efforts. Is that one of the end goals of of using this information?
That's one of many benefits. You know, it also from a long and short-term planning perspective, you know, in looking at your business mix, you know, do we have a balance in the types of products and services that we're offering? You know, are we providing a range of career opportunities for our youth so that they can stay here? Looking at, over time, what types of development projects, you know, get you those head of household jobs, and which one gets you some of those lower income jobs, because we need them all. So it really just informing us about how these types of projects and these businesses affect our local economy. It's really, it's almost an economic literacy tool.
Thank you.
Questions?
No, I don't have any questions, but I would like to thank you. This is a rather comprehensive analysis, a little hard to digest in this short period of time, but I think you've done an outstanding job, and we do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I agree. There's a kind of a lot of information here to go through. However, I would, just off the top of my head, would really like to see something that would show us an ongoing analysis of particularly the sales tax that we would be looking at. I think that would be an excellent tool for not only for us but for our residents, so they have an idea of, you know, where, what kind of an impact that's going to have on our town. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. All righty then. Well, let's see. Okay, so we're on to item number 4, if anyone's keeping track. This is presentation from Dave Mullinex from the League of California Cities, Channel County's Division Representative, for a legislative update. So we're ready for a real exciting
Always
update.
A pleasure to be back. Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council members. I want to just give a quick update for the audience on what the league is. We represent all 482 cities in the state. We have several different arms. We have an educational arm where we hold conferences and workshops for cities to come and network with each other, share stories, success stories, share stories of challenges, so we don't have to replicate the wheel. We have a lobbying team up there. We have 6 lobbyists in different policy areas. So when the legislature, there's about 1 to 2,000 bills every legislative session that get submitted. They get divided out into different areas like housing, economic development, water, environment, that kind of thing, budget. So we have lobbyists up there, support staff for lobbyists. We hold conferences and workshops, make sure that, again, everyone's learning from everyone else. You're learning Central Coast and maintaining the high quality of life that we have down here. So just this past weekend, the legislature passed the budget. The budget was on time, and a lot of people remember a few years past that budget negotiations would often drag on months and months into August, September, even October sometimes, and nothing would happen. Well, a few years ago, voters of California passed an initiative that stated if the budget wasn't passed on time, then your pay gets docked. And go figure, every year since, we've had a budget on time. And this year was
amazing.
Coincidence. So this year, they finished up on Saturday, which was the last day for them to protect their paychecks. So this year, the budget is more or less balanced. They, even though they did do some borrowing, there's always a little bit of a shell game going up there. But this year, as far as the budget goes, local governments weren't impacted that much, which is some of the good news. There's always good news, bad news in these type of presentations, and that is some of the good news that with this budget, they didn't try to take any of our money, which is a good thing. Now, with a lot of the bills that are being passed up there, and again, the dynamic that exists up there is, you know, you have people that go up there, and Monday through Thursday, they spend time in their offices dealing with constituents, even though it's hard for us down here to get up there to Sacramento. They go to committee hearings, and then they spend a lot of evenings raising money, and that seems to take a lot of their focus. And quite frankly, when you have 2,000 bills up there, about half of those bills are written and sponsored by powerful special interests up there, whether they're business interests, labor interests, other special interest groups, and they pass around a lot of money up there. Tonight there will be 6 to 8 fundraisers. Tomorrow there will be about a dozen. Wednesday, and I get these newsletters, and they talk about, okay, these legislators will have this fundraiser at this restaurant tonight. So they have a lot of people in their ear each and every day over bills that they want to pass that are going to benefit that special interest. They are able to raise an enormous amounts of money in a very short time up there in Sacramento. So the legislators, when they get up there, tend to like that. They want to be reelected. It takes a lot of money to get reelected. You have to work very hard down here locally to raise that kind of money. Up there, it happens in a matter of a couple hours. You can have a little reception or a little dinner and raise $30,000 to $100,000 in a single evening. So the challenge for us is we do not pass around money up there to individual legislators because our association, we of 482 cities, we have about 50% Democrats and 50% Republican, registered Republicans in our membership, whether it's council members, mayors, city managers, city staffs, police chiefs, fire chiefs. So we do not get involved in the partisanship issues. We hope that we go up there and we fight for good policy and what makes sense for local communities, which is a much harder thing to do than pass around a lot of money. But when we do get together and we work together, and we've had a long line of successes now over the years, when cities are on board and council members, your leaders of your community are on board, and you're speaking the same message in a cohesive way, in a compelling way, you're getting your communities behind it, you're getting business groups behind it, you're getting public safety groups behind it, you're getting labor groups behind it. When communities come together and speak on these issues that are important to your local communities, we can have a powerful impact up there in Sacramento. Now, all the polling shows, from the PPIC polls, the Phil polls, your communities and Californians respect and trust their local elected officials much more than they respect and trust being the real word, trust the legislators up there in Sacramento. And a lot of that is because they know who you are and they see you out in your communities and they know they can get access to you. Access up in Sacramento is a much harder thing to come by. Now, you have maybe 100 people wanting to visit with each and every legislator a day, and they have about 5 or 10 slots to see people. Coincidentally enough, most of those times it's people that are large contributors that get that access. Now, again, since we are not large contributors to any legislative office, we have to come in with... But what we do have is we have leaders in each and every community in the state, whether it's, again, council members, mayors, business leaders, labor leaders, all over the state. And when we do come together, we are hard to ignore, and we can make an effort. Now, the challenge is grassroots efforts, like I'm describing, are much harder to do. They're slow. They're cumbersome. It takes going to meetings, getting people engaged, getting people informed, making sure people are speaking on the same message on these type of issues. Over the past few years, the legislature, with the especially people for that, Senator Monning he's our senator in this area. He does not come from local government, but he's been very responsive in getting out, learning some of the issues that we're facing here at the local level. Comes our mayor's meetings every month. So a lot of that is, again, forming those relationships so that when we do call or we want to set up those appointments or we write a letter, that they're actually listening to us. And again, when it's a council and then when it's a community, making phone calls, writing letters, they do listen. And that's the big challenge, is making sure that we stay engaged on those important issues because a lot, all those bills that are they're passing up there, and again, in the month of August, they'll be looking at about 1,000 different bills. Those, a lot of those bills will have significant impact on here, us here locally. Now, at the local level, we have challenges for resourcing the priorities that your community has, and that's a challenge in and of itself. The problem is Sacramento will also throw up barriers and obstacles in front of you that you'll will have to overcome as well. And when all the cities work together, it's a lot easier to overcome those challenges rather than Grover Beach, a smaller city, facing up to Sacramento special interests by themselves, which is what the League of California Cities is really about. Now, we do have, again, the bills have moved out of, whether it's a bill that originated in the Assembly, they're now over at the Senate, and the bills that originated in the Senate are now over in the Assembly, and now it's that kind of that crunch time. And I'll be sending out a legislative update a little later this week. The next week will be, in fact, Cacho is our, the chair of the Local Government Committee. A lot of the very important bills that we are going to be dealing with go through his committee. He's always, again, reaching out to find out where we're at on certain bills, but we need to make sure we continually communicate with him and Senator Monning. Again, developing those relationships because, again, those special interests up there in Sacramento, they're raising lots of money. They are in their ear all the time. And so we have to make sure sometimes we have to be obnoxious about it, quite frankly, and to make sure they're listening to us as well. So we do have, this is crunch time. They're going to go on recess in the month of July, and then they come back in August to finish up the session, and the session ends in the last the end of August. I always like to bring up some of my officials up there to Sacramento during those last 2 weeks because it's literally like going through the looking glass, the way things are conducted and the way policy is implemented. It's not very transparent. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is what it is. And it really helps when local officials are up there watching over them. And sometimes it's almost like you have to make them do the right thing because there are very powerful special interests up there. They're very entrenched. They like the status quo because they benefit from the status quo, and they run the status quo. And that's why we have to – it's a constant process of reaching out, engaging, making sure they're listening, making sure they understand our challenges here locally, because once they get up there to Sacramento, there's literally kind of a bubble over the Capitol and around it. There's a circle of restaurants where they hold all their meetings after hours, and that's where the deals are cut, quite frankly. And that bubble has – reality has a very hard time of penetrating that bubble. It doesn't mean it can't be penetrated. It just means we have to make sure we stay vigilant and we stay engaged. And these next couple of months are going to be very important for this legislative session. We've been very successful over the years with running initiatives as well, which is also part of what the League does. We raise private money to run state initiatives. We're 7 for 7 over the last 10 years. We are not engaging in those type of approaches right now. We're trying to see what we can get through the legislature, but a lot of times, again, working with the legislature that is really kind of locked down by special interests, it can be a little frustrating at times, and sometimes you have to go directly to the people and to the vote. And again, that's where that polling, where what I had spoken to before, your community and Californians trust what their local officials are telling them, and they trust their monies and their tax monies to local officials to spend them more properly than they do up there in Sacramento. The approval rate up there in Sacramento is about a 15% approval rate. Down here locally, it's well over 50%. And that's what all the polling shows. So you should take heart with that. Again, it's always about getting communities behind those real important issues. And there are going to be those challenges between over the next couple of months. There are going to be some important issues. Please don't ever hesitate to contact me on how to get involved and engaged, or if you have any questions about whether we need to massage a certain bill or two. Again, the ones that are really on top of the list right now are the economic development bills that kind of replace some of the things that were taken away by redevelopment elimination and some of the charter city issues. Again, that, you know, when you become a charter city, you're trying to throw a little bit of a barrier between you and Sacramento, and they're trying to tear down that barrier more and more with certain pieces of legislation that really take away what a charter city is supposed to be. So, with that, when hundreds of faxes are pouring into an office, it sends a message. Or when hundreds of calls are pouring in, it sends a message. when the legislators are down here, they come down every Friday from Sacramento and spend time in the district. It's a big, that's a good time to make sure we're visiting with them as well, making sure they understand what's going on, not just going to ribbon cutting services. There's challenges that we're facing, and they need to know those challenges. And they're supposed to be representing us, and they need to help us, and we need to help them as well. So email's probably on the lowest end of that kind of priority chain as far as lobbying. You know, it's faxes, it's letters, it's written letters, it's visits. And when we go up to Sacramento, that sends a big message as well, because it's hard to get up there. They know it is. I mean, it's that horrific drive up 5 and 5 hours of that, and they know it's hard to get up there. So they know when we go up there to visit them up there, they listen. And again, when we get more community members involved, whether, again, it's labor, whether it's business, whether it's public safety or other civic organizations, it just adds to the force that's being created here at the grassroots level.
Okay. Mr. Nichols?
AB7, Charter Cities.
SB7 by Daryl Steinberg, who comes from local government, which is part of the big frustration. It is going to be in COCHO's committee next week, and I'll be sending out an alert on that this week. SB7 states that if you want to ever have access to state monies again on construction projects, you have to have prevailing wage on even if it's just your city's money. Now, we have 121 charter cities right now in California. About 71 have already granted that prevailing wage exemption by negotiations one-to-one with labor groups in those cities, and some cities said, hey, we'll give that up. Some cities, it doesn't make sense, because when projects are the smaller projects, if you have to pay prevailing wage, sometimes it doesn't pencil out. What it really comes down to, though, is local control. And, you know, those type of decisions belong here in this chamber and not up there in Sacramento at some bar or restaurant because people are passing out checks. Now, SB7 will be in committee in COCHO's committee. It has passed out of the Senate. It will move into the local government committee next week, and then it will go on the floor. The only chance we have of beating this back is to bottle it up in the committee next week. If it gets out on the full floor, because it's backed by a lot of the very powerful labor groups, the Democrats are pretty much part and parcel in, you know, a lot of them are in the pockets of labor. It'll get, if it goes to the floor of the assembly, it'll pass out and go to the governor's desk. Now, once it gets to the governor's desk, we do have a chance there, because he uses a term called subsidiarity a lot, which is basically local control. Now, he has used that only in the context of local school districts, but we're working with him on a very regular basis to try to extend that tent of local control to local communities, because that only makes sense. So SB7, again, Daryl Steinberg, he's the president of the Senate. It's his bill. It has a lot of juice behind it. We've got a couple of chances to beat it back, but it's going to be it's an uphill battle. But we'll find out really quickly, and I will be sending out an action alert here very quickly, very soon.
Good. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, then. Thanks so much, Dave.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, folks, we're now going to move on to public communications. And this is a time where any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. Council will listen to all communications. In compliance with the Brown Act, however, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. Okay, thank you very much. So I have a couple of speaker slips here, so I'm going to, hopefully these folks have managed to hang around, and if not, then I'm sorry. First is Melissa Peters, and she wanted to speak about smoke-free multi-unit housing.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the City Council. I'm here representing the San Luis Obispo County Tobacco Control Program, located in the County Health Agency at 2180 Johnson Avenue in San Luis. Our program works with local multi-unit housing owners and managers who would like to adopt smoke-free policies for their properties. Smoke-free policies help landlords protect their tenants not only from the dangers of secondhand smoke, but also they help protect their property from damage, fire risk.
They provide policies that are better, that are healthier, cost-effective, safe, and legal for landlords to adopt. Our program would like to recognize the Vista Pacific Apartments in Grover Beach for providing its renters with some smoke-free units. Our program provided Vista Pacific with
a shower. Oh, no. Okay. Right. We lost her. And then Andrea C. Strand, she wanted to speak about legislative agenda.
Well, I want to applaud the previous speaker. I thought he did an excellent summary of life in Sacramento. I will say, though, as a new widow and a woman, I didn't sit in the bars. I don't drink. So I didn't participate in that world. Many of the women that I served with chuckled because we all went back to our offices and worked, and the men went to the bars. But anyway, minus all of that.
Isn't that always the way?
I wanted to raise the levity in here. I just wanted to say I don't know what the position is of the League of Cities, but I do want to caution viewers that are watching this, residents, citizens of Grover Beach, that there is an assault on Proposition 13. Some 35 years ago, we just had an anniversary for the passage of Prop 13. When everybody was against it, it overwhelmingly was passed. And as elected officials, you should know that polls are showing that even after 35 years, that proposition is very popular. There is an assault in Sacramento. Right now, there's some 7 constitutional amendments that are floating through the Assembly and the Senate. It'll be interesting. I'm anticipating that all 7 will make the governor's desk. I may be surprised, but that's what I'm thinking. And that every one of them slices away in some way Prop 13. And so I don't know what the governor would do, but I just wanted to call your attention. There are so many people that are being hit from so many ways, from the federal government, and we know about Obamacare. You're going to be talking about California's own affordable care. Just on and on at the state, the federal, and then concern about people. So I just wanted to raise that issue to say the assault is on and to be aware of it. And as I said, you may want to find out what the League's position is. I haven't been to the website, and I haven't taken note of that. But it kind of raised interest seeing you just had that report. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that is the extent of my speaker slips. Is there anyone else who would care to speak at this time? All right. Seeing none, then we are going to move along. See if we can pick up the pace here. So now we're going to open our public hearing section, and this is the introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance to amend Grover Beach Municipal Code, Article 10, Chapter 4, increasing the number of card tables, increasing hour of operation, and removing the liquor license requirement. So we had a request by Councilmember Nichols to continue this item to a date certain. So we're going to open the item, and did you want to make a motion to do that then?
If that's appropriate, I think we can make the motion first and then open it to public comment.
Yeah, that would be appropriate, Councilman McCurry.
Okay, I would like to suggest that we take this item and carry it over until, if we want a date certain, I would like to recommend we have it first meeting in August.
So that'll work for staff?
Yes.
Would that work? Then that would be the date certain. I would like to move this item to that date.
Okay. And I believe that we had council member.
I will second that motion. Yeah.
Okay.
And implicit in the motion is to open the public hearing and to continue it to that date.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right then. So.
Voice vote.
So where do we go now? We'll just do a voice vote, and then we can anyone that would care to speak.
Right.
Okay. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. None opposed. So motion carries.
And at this point in time, Mayor, if you should open the public hearing and either take any testimony of people who are here, or simply don't take any testimony and continue it to date certain.
Okay. So then. And is that my decision?
Certainly.
Okay. Then I'm going to, I guess I better do this. I'm going to open the public hearing, and then I'm going to say, since we're going to continue this to, I don't see anyone here. Raise your hand if you're here to speak to this. No. Okay. Then I'm going to say that we are not going to take public testimony. We'll save that for when we hear the entire item.
Okay.
All right, then.
Thank you. And so for the record, by action, the council has continued this item to date certain, which is the first meeting in August, being August 5th at 6:30 p.m. at this chamber.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to move along to the consent agenda. And there are items 6 through 10. The members of the audience may speak on any item listed on this agenda. I'll go through them. 6 is the treasurer's report for the period May 28th through June 11th, 2013.
The committee that that handles all of that. Do you have any idea how they were able to get this reduction? We are now paying down to $84,825. The prior year, or it was $84,000, it's now going down to $72,489, which is a difference and a savings of $12,336. That's a substantial amount of money, and I'm rather curious if you have any idea how they were able to come about with this reduction, which very rarely happens. Things always go up.
Yes, that's correct. As you know, there is a committee that's put together, and Chief Copsey usually attends the meetings for the committee regarding the animal control services contract. And during the committee times, they look at everything from how many complaints come in, how many dogs are taken in, the population that deals with animal services, including registration of dogs, and how many cat complaints there are. So there's a multitude of things that they look over, and they, you know, put that in a price list of what it takes for their staff to perform these duties. And then that's how they come to the dollar figure. And it just so happens is that this year it showed that we had a decrease in the necessary funds needed to perform their functions. So they take over all the functions, and we actually had a cost savings in this category.
Do you know, is this based on the service they provide to Grover Beach, or is it the service that they provide to the entire county, and this reduction is applicable, a certain amount of reduction is applicable to each of the agencies?
Well, this particular one is just to our city. All 7 cities are involved in the discussions and in the determination of what their costs are. Some cities have a very small cost because they don't have many services that are required. Other cities, for instance, like Paso Robles, are over $300,000 a year cost. So the lowering of our $84,000 to $72,000 and change, I think, was pretty good.
Well, I think it's excellent. I commend you and or the chief and the rest of the committee for the work that you've done in keeping the cost down like this. I think it's great. Thank you.
Yes.
That's all I
have. Okay, thank you. All right, so if then...
I just had comments on 9 and 10 when it's appropriate.
Okay, well, maybe we could get a motion, can we, to get to accept the agenda as proposed, and then we could probably go with some comments after that?
Yeah, I'll move that we accept the consent agenda.
Thank you.
I'll second that with the caveat that as with the minutes as amended. Is that?
Yes.
Is that? Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and I didn't look here. Do we need anything that has a roll call on here?
Yes.
We do. Okay, so then I guess we better have a roll call.
Okay. Actually, do I get to give comments first?
Or if you like.
Or is it?
I'd just rather get the business done first, and then we'll take your comments. Is that okay?
Either way.
Does that work for you? Works, yeah. Is that all right over there? All righty then.
Sure.
Then let's go.
Yes.
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 Yes. So what do you have to say there, sir?
Great. I just basically wanted to commend staff for both 9 and 10 for putting together the staff reports in trying to figure out how, A, the city's going to react to the Affordable Care Act going forward, and we appreciate you bringing it forward in a timely fashion like that. And then also wanted to thank the city manager and the negotiating team on both sides for the willingness to work with within our budget parameters and to get this done in a timely fashion. So thank you for that.
Ditto. Okay, thank you very much. All righty then. Well,
Madam Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Could I request a brief 5-minute break?
5 minutes.
Yes.
We got a long way to go here. Ready back there, folks? Okie dokie. Okay, here we go. We're ready to go. So, we are, well, everyone's ready but me, so maybe I better get myself together here. Okay, and we're going to move on to regular business, and this is item number 11, status report on phase one of the Grover Beach Municipal Network. And I guess we're going to start with City Manager Peralt is going to start us off, and then...
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, pleased to be able to provide this report to you. It is, in effect, a status report on Phase 1 of the Grover Beach Municipal Network. As the council is well aware, the development of a broadband network capable of providing the serving the communication and information needs of both existing and future businesses has been was first identified in the city's economic development strategy back in 2008. Currently, the implementation of this network is considered to be an economic development goal. It was a part of your work program that you recently passed approved in April. By way of background, the city has been working on broadband for a little bit of time. In January 2010, the council adopted an implementation plan that was provided in part by Digital West and as well as Municipal Services collaborated in putting that initial report together. Then last October, you received an initial report, the first status report, on developing a system locally and working collaboratively with Digital West. The purpose of this report is simply to provide the council with an update on the status. Digital West is going to provide a presentation on exactly what the network could look like, what that partnership might be, some of the key elements that would be contained in that partnership.
Stuff on fiber optics. So fiber optics, this slide basically tells you that fiber optics is the fastest thing in the world. It's the fastest communication medium that there is. And we can bring fiber optics into the city of Grover Beach and directly into the businesses. We're not taking it to a location where we use copper from that point on. This is fiber optics and glass and light straight into the businesses. It's the fastest medium that they have. The benefits of fiber optics have gone, survey after survey, from chambers of commerce to other city developments say that fiber optics brings economic development. It helps encourage the businesses that build those non-smokestack types of businesses that have lots of high-paying jobs, software companies, telemedicine, all the information that's continuing to grow that we have these days is being pushed around through fiber optic communication. So bringing that into a community really is taking it to the next level. And by putting that into Grover Beach, we really are pushing ourselves beyond a majority of Californians. You recall Google had an initiative in 2009, and they said, hey, let's try to find a city to put fiber optics in for free. It wasn't really to show that we can put fiber optics in. It was to try to get people moving, try to get the telecommunication companies to step up. Google is providing these applications and all this stuff that's out there, but the cable companies and phone companies have gone so slow, they just haven't really gotten to the point where that communication can really move. So Google said, we're going to pick a city, and we're going to go ahead and put fiber optics in there for every one of the residents. A lot of communities went and had rallies and tried to get it, tried to get Google to come there and spend all this money in their community. And it would have been great to have it on the Central Coast, but they chose Kansas City. And so they're still under that progress, right? And they're still putting that process together. But they do sell. You can go on their website. It says what they're doing to the residents there. They've got gigabit connectivity to the offices, the houses, television. They put the whole package together. So Google wanted to show that it can be done. Well, Digital West has been doing this since right around 2008, 2009. We were also pursuing our own goals of putting commercial fiber optics throughout the San Luis Obispo City area. We're a California utility, so we can go under the ground, we can go up on the poles. We are delivering broadband. We're an inter-exchange carrier in California. And to date, we've got over 25 miles of fiber optics in San Luis Obispo City with over 75, actually it's 80 lit buildings now in San Luis Obispo. And that number continues to grow. We're expanding out to other areas. We've got some stuff down in Lompoc where we're serving SpaceX. We've connected to Cal Poly, the city of SLO. The county of SLO is actually our first customer when we turned it up in early 2009. So if you look at the San Luis Obispo build, this is just to give you an idea of what we've been doing over the last few years. And so our fiber optic network there hits just the businesses and the commercial areas that are there. So we're doing this to serve the community that we have here in the Central Coast. But one of the main reasons Digital West is doing this is we're trying to connect into the three cable landing stations that are here. And so in my previous visits, we talked about these three cable landing stations that we have. It's an incredible asset that our county has that you won't find anywhere else on the west coast of North America. You can go up to some other areas up in by Seattle. They'll have a couple of cables, but we have the largest density of these fiber optic cables that go subsea out to all the Pacific Rim countries from Asia, Japan, now there, all the way down to South America. And so because we have that concentration, we have a very unique asset of having some cables that are really fiber optic cables that are running north and south in California that come right to our area. And Digital West, as a service provider, as a data center provider, we want to connect to all three of these cable landing stations. So by doing so, we need to go pass through a few communities. And, of course, there's an opportunity because Grover Beach has them right in your backyard. So what we've been talking about with previous city councils, with current city councils, with the city staff, is how can we leverage this virtual port that we have here on the coast and really leverage and market what we have here in this beachside community that has high-speed connectivity. So because that cable landing station is right here, with a progressive city staff and council that wants to see what we can do to market this and really promote it for economic development, we can really take this and make it a win-win-win. We have some opportunities, too, with the county of FSLO, who also has another project they want to build. So we've talked with both the city and the county and Digital West to say we can all three get involved in this. We all share costs. We all save money. We all can kind of get what we want out of this whole thing. It could really be a great boon for everybody. So it's a win-win-win. Here's what we're proposing, and this has gone back and forth. We've talked about different areas, and it's hard to see it on the map there, but what we have here is a demonstration of where we will have fiber optics to hit specific business areas and business districts. So you'll see up at the top near the Ford properties that are up there, they've put in some conduit early on when they put their development in. That would carry us down into the blue lines you see, which is all the new proposed underground that we would do to service other portions of the area of commercial areas. And then if you see, there's kind of a large concentration down at the bottom there. The yellow lines you see are shadow conduits. So that's some proactive moves that the city made, putting conduits in the ground back when they were doing some sewer work, I believe, is what was going on there, sewer and water. And so we can go and tie into those existing conduits with the new blue conduits to serve that area. And that's been a focus for a while. We've been looking at it as a potentially redevelopment area and really revitalizing that area with, you know, businesses, building long-term asset to have in the ground. The conduit, without being broken, will pretty much last forever. So the proposal we have in place is that by putting this together, the city will then own that infrastructure, that conduit. And then Digital West will be bringing in and putting fiber in that conduit. And so we're in charge of that part of it. We're in charge of dealing with the glass, connecting it, really being the service provider. But the city's going to own the asset of the conduit in the ground. We'll also be pulling fiber for the city to use. So the city, any anchor institution or any asset that the city wants to connect, the bus system, the library, whatever those entities are that want to connect, City Hall, those will be on the city's own fiber optic network. So there will be some cost savings there that you won't be paying for your current telecommunications costs, but that's pretty small. We are going to focus on, as I pointed out, the business development districts. And then those green lines, and we talked about the Grand Avenue area there. What we'd like to propose is to put in a system where, because a lot of times we come to some of the smaller businesses, and they're like not really willing to spend a lot of money for this connectivity. But what we'd like to propose is by bringing in fiber right down Grand Avenue, we propose a district where we lower the cost and really deliver that full high-speed connectivity at really a fraction of the cost, lower than anywhere else in the county and anywhere else that we're serving our clients. So we think that's something the city has sort of been adding as an enhancement. We really want to revitalize that downtown district like you're doing with the sidewalks and the roads. We'll do it with the connectivity as well. And by doing this, then, all three entities will own what they have. The city will own all the conduit asset. The fiber optics that go in for the city and for the county will be owned by the city and the county. And then Digital West will be sort of a tenant within the conduit system itself. So this public-private partnership is really a public-public-private partnership. Some of the advances we have is it advances public safety and security, surveillance cameras, things like that. I'm sure the police department would be happy to be able to put those into congested areas where they need to. There's some bottom line savings for the city on their communication network. It definitely is an economic driver. Every city we talked to was saying, what can you do for us? Can you bring it here? And so we started talking with the city of Grover Beach first, and so I think we're getting close to making something happen here. It does open the door, too, by putting this fiber network out. We're not proposing we go to the residential side just yet, but it doesn't preclude us from doing that. And by having it close by, we might have some opportunity to put some wireless nodes out, or there's a development down on Farrell where the developer called us and said, if we put some conduits in the ground, can you come out here? Sure. Why can't we serve those 80 homes that are down there if that's something we can do? And then what we also are proposing is a revenue share with the city. So as we, as the city invests in putting this in, as Digital West invests in putting this in, we'd like to propose something where the city does get a residual back on the revenue that's developed out of the city to help to replenish that money that's spent. And with that, I think that was it. Yeah. So any questions?
Okay, let's start to the right this time. Mr. Nichols?
A couple of questions on the revenue sharing. Is that a 50-50 deal or what?
Probably not, no. The expense that we'll be putting in and running the network, if I step back for a minute, when we first proposed something, we started working together with the city, we were looking at the city actually providing the services, and the costs are pretty daunting to put this network in and then pay for it ongoing, all the people, all the maintenance. So what we're doing is taking that burden off the city. So the city's really, you're down to just owning the conduit. There's not really much you have to do other than just have that stuff in the ground. So the cost actually is primarily on the side of the operator, which is us. So we haven't determined or finalized any sort of a number on that share, but it's probably down less than 10%. It's probably closer to 5%.
Okay. I figured that.
Yeah. It's got to make sense for all of us, yeah. So,
yeah. You have indicated that you have approximately 25 miles of fiber optic cables in San Luis Obispo itself.
Mm-hmm.
What is the real draw for somebody to come to Grover Beach instead of San Luis Obispo, which already has fiber optic cable in it?
Mm-hmm. Well, San Luis Obispo doesn't have a beach. We have a relatively high rental rate as far as cost. And depending on what the types of businesses are that are interested in relocating their business, maybe it's a medium-sized business, maybe it's a small-sized business, having the connectivity they can get here, which is, you know, second to none. It's second to anything you get in a major metropolitan area, but yet live in a nice community next to the beach. Really, I think that's part of the advantage of that. Another opportunity, I think, with that redevelopment area looking down there in the south part of town, there's potential for that, some lots to go in there that could house some larger size businesses, software development firms, and having that proximity to that cable landing station itself could potentially be a benefit. So if there's a company that says, hey, we're going to be working with somebody in Korea, or we're working with a firm that's in China, and we really would like to have that lowest latency possible, we can do it anywhere else, or we can do it right here in a beach community right next to the cable landing station. That's an opportunity. They could use this fiber to directly connect to that landing station. And that's not something they can see just about, you know, any millions of them. There are plenty of them. And in San Luis Obispo, we've got, you know, that's what we're basing our 25 miles of fiber on, is trying to reach these companies. I know companies that are in Avila Beach, Pismo Beach, in this area here, that they just love having. They've got seven to eight people in their companies. They're developers. They're web developers. They're online e-commerce operators. They don't need to be anywhere but where they'd like to be. So I can see that advantage of being here, be able to walk down and have lunch right on Grand Avenue and back to their office.
So it brings up another point then. So you do aerial down Grand Avenue, let's say, and fiber optics aerially.
That's where a majority of it is when you see it on the telephone poles.
Okay.
And Grand doesn't have anything on it, so it would be the two
right.
adjacent cities streets next to it.
Okay.
But a predominant amount of it is actually up in the air still. I mean, I think all of us like to see it underground because there you don't see it. It's out of sight. But it's still a very low-cost way to deliver that service. So
definitely.
If we can run down the back, some of the alleyways of those Grand Avenue businesses, we can just drop it right into each one of those businesses, which most of them are being fed by now.
Okay.
So.
And then along Grand Avenue, if you look at a lot of the businesses, do you really see the customer pool given the cost of the high-speed internet?
I don't, and that's why we proposed that that enhancement project that say, you know, we're going to give you something that would normally cost $500, maybe for, you know, less than $100.
Right.
Something that really gives them that kind of incentive to do it. And I would imagine that when you have this sort of connectivity option, you might see some of those retail and then office spaces like you've got down on the west side of Grand. I know Ventura, we're talking with the city of Ventura. That's their whole thing. They want retail downstairs, and then they want offices upstairs, and that's what I like to see in their district. Because then the offices have people that are working, and at lunchtime, they're all filling in the restaurants. And that's really what they'd like to see. Those are high-paying jobs. So I think by us doing that, I don't know all the plans of what Grover Beach has to going down Grand Avenue, but I'm assuming that might be one of them, that we can have that retail and an office space in some of those areas. And if you can see from your office, you can see the ocean. I mean, there's you can't do that in SLO.
That's pretty nice. So then if you put it up in the aerial, then there really isn't a cost sharing with the city.
Part of it isn't. There's a revenue share, but on that one. But what we were proposing is serving as many as we can. And if we're going to be putting the underground in, that's more expensive. The city will own that. We can put in more, but I don't know to what degree we want to add. You know, we want to make sure that it makes economic sense.
Right.
But the revenue share really would be on the services that we're providing. And by going aerial along Grand Avenue, it's going to be a low-cost way. Now, down the road, as we're doing more underground projects, as other opportunities open up, we can put stuff underground and put that through the city conduit.
So we're still sharing the revenue, whether we're above ground or below ground.
Correct, yes. And I will add, I didn't note it on here too, but one of the proposals is where we are putting the underground in, we're not just going to put in one conduit. We're going to put in three extra. And the reason for that is that the Rule 20A, where they eventually come down and start dropping the stuff underground, those companies, whether it's Digital West or the cable company or whatnot, they have to put stuff in the ground too, and it costs a lot of money. Well, if the city already has that in the ground and you have a conduit in there, it costs almost nothing for us to put the extra in when we have it to the ground open. But then you can sell those conduits to them and essentially get your money paid back. And it may be 5 years from now, it might be 10, but it's, at least it's there and ready to go.
So then going up from Grand Avenue to the north along, I guess that's Front Street, you've gotten your. I'm looking at the map that you had up. You had a private line, and what was that?
Is that the old purple up there?
Yeah, the little purple line.
When that project was done with the Ford property that's up there, when they put that in, they dropped in their own conduit. I don't know if it was your city request or not, but they put it in because that was supposed to be a tech center.
Right.
So the conduit went. There was a road to nowhere. It didn't go anywhere. So the conduit's still there. It just doesn't connect to anything. Huh. And so we propose to utilize that, and it's already in the ground. So we don't have to pay anything. We just have to get to it, and we serve all the businesses up there. Volet Team Apparel and those businesses that are up there. So we should be able to serve many of those along the tracks there.
So it's in the ground. Is it in the public right of way, or is it on private property, or we don't know?
I'm pretty sure it's in the public right of way.
Public right of way?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. That's just it for now. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks. I have a couple nuts and bolts questions. You mentioned in your presentation telemedicine. What is that? That sounds great, but what is it?
So I serve on one of the hospital boards in San Luis Obispo, and they have a lot of the radiologists that look at so if you go in for an MRI scan in the middle of the night from the emergency room, they don't have a radiologist that's there. They have someone that's in Chicago, and they're looking through that scan. It's just, here's the file real quickly. It comes back. That's happening more and more, more often.
Okay.
So also with all the medical record sharing, the electronic medical records, these files are not getting smaller, they're getting bigger, right? The imaging and stuff. So with that kind of connectivity, those files are constantly going back and forth. So you need that throughput in order to make that happen. So it's sort of you're building in advance of that.
Okay, wonderful. Great. So you mentioned that you had 75 lit buildings in San Luis. And you may have mentioned this, but I probably missed it. How long has it taken to accomplish that 75 buildings?
So we started in the beginning of 2009.
Okay.
And we have about 80 now. So
about 80, okay.
That's 3-4 years.
3-4 years. Okay, so basically, I guess where my point.
Well, There are a couple of other things we have to complete. One is we have to build our network all the way down to Grover Beach to get in here. So there's going to be some efforts there. But that's underway now. So we're working through the permitting process to get that complete. But I would say with a green light, as soon as we get that green light, I'd say safely within the 12 months is probably when we start breaking ground.
Okay.
So maybe a little earlier than that, but that's probably when we start breaking ground.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
That's what I had for the moment.
Thank you. Well, I think I just have one. And that is, so where there is conduit, then the fiber would be run through that.
Yes.
Okay.
If I could, and perhaps if you could, Mr. Williams, talk about the connection to Game Pacific Crossing. And I think if you could expand on that a little bit, that actually once our system is connected, we'll be able to connect to Pacific Crossing as well. Is that true?
So Pacific Crossing is the name of that cable landing station that's in your backyard here. In order to utilize that crossing and actually connect straight over to the Pacific Rim countries, you've got to be inside to get a connection into their building and then buy some transportation. You've got to buy a circuit across there. So for the city to do that, we were looking at that initially, and it's expensive. It starts about $10,000 a month just to get in there, just to get it started. Well, Digital West having other customers, another customer base that we have that's not even in the region here, other customers from other areas are interested in utilizing us to get to these landing stations. That will get us into these landing stations much quicker. And so once we are, then the benefits come to Grover Beach as well. The benefits would come to all of Digital West customers because we'll now be in that cable landing station and purchasing that circuits that go across the ocean. So until that happens, it would be we still have an incredible fast network. That's not a requirement for this, but we'll be ready to build up right into it. And as soon as that customer comes ready to do it, we'll be inside. Just so happened I signed that customer about 4 months ago, so they're actually in Digital West. It's a company out of Guam. So because of that, we'll be planning to get inside that cable landing station pretty much as soon as we light everything up. So it's kind of a win-win, really. So one of our customers is getting this community into that landing station. Is that what you're interested in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do have one more question.
Go ahead.
I had probably a very naive question. Broadband, is there, with all of these customers, when does it get full? Or will it then slow down? Or is fiber, this information going over glass, does it ever have an upper end?
So, good question. I know sometimes I know where I live, the students come back for Cal Poly, all of a sudden my internet slows down. You know, you can feel it. It's a different type of system. They're feeding a network into a node in a neighborhood, and everyone kind of uses it like a hub and spoke kind of a thing. What we're doing is delivering full throughput all the way to each end user, and really there's no bottleneck. The bottleneck might be the head end that we have, but we have it. It's 100 times bigger than what any customer would be able to push. So there really isn't a bottleneck, and since the glass itself stays the same, all they're changing is the electronics on each end, the light, the little lasers that push the light over the fiber. That just keeps getting better and better. So you can push terabytes per second now with this fiber, the same fiber that we'll be putting in the ground. And as we need to, we can increase the light. But there's nobody in this area that needs anything beyond what we're already putting in the ground. So for example, a traditional gigabit per second. You know, most laptops have a gigabit circa in the side of them you can connect into new laptops, and they can't even push that much themselves. So that's the capable speeds. 10 gigabit is actually what we push on our head end, so it's 10 times that. So yeah, no concern on speed or bottlenecks for there.
So Digital West, you're trying to come down from San Luis to hook up to Pacific Crossing, mm-hmm. and probably complete some circuit of some sort. How long before that happens, and just a rough guesstimate?
The circuit that comes down?
Yeah, before you actually extend your line from San Luis down to...
We're working on that now. So that would be part of... If something doesn't happen, just give you examples.
Okay.
So if something doesn't happen in a consortium, we can't work together, we'll still come down straight to the landing station. We probably won't touch any businesses. We probably won't be doing anything other than just get to the landing station.
Right.
This is a way for us to kind of work together, but we're working on that now. So that same time frame that I gave you, that same 12 months, is really what we're looking
at. So in 12 months, you think you'll be down?
Well, I'll tell you, we're already working on getting the circuit, our own part, down here. If we can get this green lighted at some point, I was thinking within 12 months, that would then start construction on the city side of that, the city network portion of that.
So we don't necessarily need the conduit. I mean, could the phase one just be aerial?
Phase one could be, but that's the city's not participating as much. If that were the case, there's really not much more of an asset to it. So
are you coming down some right of way, like the railroad's right of way, or
not the railroads? No, but we can use any public utility easement along any road.
Okay.
Or aerial. That's so because we're
so you're coming down roads to get to
correct.
Correct.
Hmm.
We had a member of the public that wanted to speak to the last item.
Thank you.
And actually, I do have one more question while Ms. Brown is getting a microphone brought to her. Tim, how much room in a conduit do you need? I mean, is it a 2-inch conduit? Is it a 4-inch conduit? Is it a 4 with 3 1s wrapped around it? I mean,
so typically we use 2-inch conduits, and the fiber we're pushing through, it's about the size of the diameter of my finger. So that'll be typically between 196 to 288 fiber strands in a conduit, in a fiber strand that's big. So so a 2-inch conduit, it's not too big, but we'll usually put a few of them at once. So if we're doing directional boring or trenching, they'll drop in 3-4 different conduits, and each one could then have 1 to 2 fiber cables going through it.
Okay.
Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. So, Ms. Brown, are you ready?
Am I on?
Yes. You're on.
Just two questions. If the system fails, who troubleshoots and who pays to fix it?
I think we're going to have to. I'm sorry. Would you mind coming back? And thank you.
That's actually a very good question. I didn't address that. So the city is responsible for the conduit and then nothing else. So because we'd be running the network, we're responsible for the hardware, the truck rolls in case the fiber gets hit. All those parts, that's part of our responsibility.
Okay, that answers that. One other thing. What if Digital West fails?
If Digital West fails, when Bob and I were talking about this, we would set it up so that it would fail over to the city, then having control over what happens next. So.
Okay. That's all I had.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All righty then. You're on.
On May 1st, 2013, the State Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, announced a Notice of Funding Availability, or NOFA, for the Home Investment Partnership Program, commonly known as just the Home Program. This NOFA is for affordable rental projects, first-time homebuyer projects, first-time homebuyer programs, owner-occupied housing rehab, and tenant-based rental assistance programs. A minimum of $28 million is available for this NOFA, with a maximum application amount of $700,000. The deadline for the receipt of a complete application is July 8th. Last year, the city submitted an application for home funds for the first-time homebuyer program, but was not one of the 23 applications funded out of the 38 applications received last year. The city will receive additional points this year as a result of not being funded last year, which should make this year's application more competitive. It should also be noted the 23 applications that were funded last year cannot apply this year, or those jurisdictions cannot apply this year. In order to be eligible for funding for any of the activities, the applicant's household income must fall below 80% of the 2013 county median income. For example, for a family of four, that household would have a maximum annual income of $57,350 to qualify for any of the activities. This NOFA has six eligible activities, and the application may be a combination of up to two of the activities. The first-time homebuyer program provides funds for loans to homebuyers for acquisition of a dwelling to assist eligible households in transitioning to home ownership. Funds would be used as financial assistance in the form of a deferred payment, which serves as gap financing between the loan amount and the purchase price. For example, an individual may obtain a pre-qualification letter from their lender in the amount of $200,000, but the individual could only find homes that are priced at $300,000. The city's program would be utilized to provide the gap financing in order to allow the individual the ability to purchase the home. The city anticipates offering these funds at an interest rate of 0% for a period of 30 years with deferred payments and no loan limit. However, the loan cannot exceed 50% of the primary loan amount, and the maximum sales price of a home through the program is $378,100. And those are regulated by home regulations. The owner-occupied rehabilitate a specific multifamily rental project that also needs to be specified in the application, and staff is not aware of any potential projects either. A home buyer project provides construction financing for new homes or acquisition, rehab, or conversion projects with
the funding required to be passed along to the new buyers of the project. Using the South 10th Street and Farrell Road project as an example, the funding could aid in the property acquisition or the construction, but the additional cost would increase the amount of the loan to more than the maximum sales price for the low-income unit. Staff believes that increasing the low-income sales price would deter from the goal of providing affordable housing. And then lastly, the sixth eligible activity is tenant-based rental assistance program. This program provides funds for rent subsidies and or security deposits to eligible households. The program would need to be administered by a nonprofit organization, and currently staff is unaware of any organization seeking funds for this program. Based on a review of the six activities, staff is recommending the home application include the first-time homebuyer program for $300,000 and the owner-occupied rehabilitation program for $400,000 for a total application of $700,000, the maximum application amount. That concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Questions? We'll start down here again.
None?
To my left. I can always count on you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Just hopefully really straightforward, simple questions for you. You said last year that the state funded, I think it was 23 out of 38.
Correct.
Okay. How close, did they tell us how close we were to making that funding list?
We scored, we scored 506 points. Mm-hmm. The cutoff score was 556 points, and the highest application received 676.
Okay. So we were probably fairly close to being funded.
So if all the points were the same this year, or pretty close, our extra 100 bonus points for not being funded last year would actually get us funded.
Okay, great. So, which leads to two more questions. For the rehab portion of the project, which I think you were recommending funding to the tune of $400,000, that's subject to the income limits as well?
Yes.
Okay. Great. And then one last question is the time for application prep, we've got estimated as about $1,850. Is that included in this year's budget in anticipation, or?
Actually, we're able to cover that with under expenditures in the department budget from this year's budget.
Okay. Great. That's all I have.
Thank you. You're good? I'm wondering, first of all, when you apply, do you get, if we're awarded the funds, do we get the entire amount? They don't like reduce your funds, or
not necessarily. They could fund a lower amount.
I see. Okay. So we go in and we ask for 300 of one and 400 of the other. We could come back with 200 of one and 150 of the other, or something.
Or just one of the projects.
Or just one of the projects. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And then regarding the first-time home buyer program, I'm just wondering about somebody who's earning 80% of the median income with a family of four. Are they even going to be able to be approved or qualify for a loan, do you think? What happens to those funds if they're not used, or if we don't have folks that are qualified buyers?
Part of the application is actually a feasibility chart with some data from the city, so that's part of the application. But yeah, a family of four, $57,000, would be able to obtain a loan, but you know, it would be a smaller loan. It would be a smaller, lower-priced unit in the city.
So you've done research then, and so you're fairly confident that there are folks who would be able to qualify for that we'd be able to assist somebody like that, that we have folks that can qualify for this program.
Some of that does depend on the actual price of homes. And if you look today, I mean, there are not a lot of listings in Grover Beach. There's probably 27 homes on the market right now, but there are some in the $200,000, $250,000 range. So that kind of person may qualify.
Okay. So then what if the funds don't get Do we keep them for a long time? Is there a time frame?
Or is that
no, it's just the same bonus points.
Thank you.
All right, then. So since I didn't open it up to public comment because it didn't tell me to, but since we had public comment the last time, I'm going to ask if anyone in public cares to comment. Thank you.
Couple of questions. One, who's responsible for vetting qualified home buyers under this program? In other words, a first-time home buyer. How can we be sure that that's true? Or if it, you know, could be in the wife's name now instead of the husband's? Does that qualify as a first-time home buyer? That's one. It's just an oversight issue with me. And I really question $250,000 house. How much would they have to be? How much could they qualify for in a loan?
Okay. Are those your questions?
Yes.
Okay. All right then. So
we'll take a shot here.
Okay. Thank you.
So the conventional loan, that part is actually reviewed by a normal lender, and in the worksheets that we did based on that median income. $200,000 loan is achievable. The balance, let's say, if it was a $250,000 home, that qualification would be reviewed by our consultant. So I think then what was the second part of that question?
First of all, who's going to do the oversight? And so
right. So the lender for the conventional loan and the consultant for the first-time homebuyer qualifications.
Okay, so the consultant would be the one who would determine if, in fact, they are a bona fide first-time home buyer, and then the lender would be the one who would determine if, in fact, they would be able to qualify for
right, and I think to further, there are definitions in the home program as far as what qualifies as a first-time home buyer. I think it's you.
3 years.
Yeah, it would have to be 3 years since your last purchase of a home.
I see.
So there are plenty of guidelines that give us a direction as to who qualifies and who doesn't.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. All righty then. You good?
Generated one more question, so I apologize. For the oversight, you said there would be a consultant that was performing that. Is the cost of the consultant in the administrative costs that can be reimbursed by the state?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I read that in there. Just wanted to confirm it.
Very good. All right, then. So we're going to need some kind of a motion here, if someone would care to.
I'll make a motion if you'd like.
Thank you.
I move that we adopt the resolution approving the submittal of the home application for the first-time home buyers and the rehab program in the amount recommended by staff.
Okay, that would be $300,000 for the first-time home buyer and $400,000 for the owner-occupied rehab. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. We have a first and a second. I guess this is a roll call, right? Yes.
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 Just to clarify for staff, that motion included city manager's ability to execute any documents that are necessary for execution of the program.
Yes. Didn't I mention that?
That's in the resolution, right? Yep.
I thought I mentioned that.
Sorry. Thank you. So then item 13, we've already determined that has been pulled and it's going to take that at a future meeting when the real mayor can be here.
You are the real mayor.
Aren't you glad I'm not?
No.
Okay, so now we'll move along to I don't know if we need to do something different. Do we have to change a hat or something to go to the Grover Beach City Council in its capacity as a successor agency to the dissolved Grover Beach Improvement Agency?
No, Honorable Mayor, Council Members, you sit as that body. The report is prepared, just to clarify and make sure that all the actions are taken correctly. What is before you today is basically a request for a cleanup or a formalization of the title on two pieces of property. Those two pieces of property, one of them located on the Hillcrest Avenue by the water tanks and the other one on 10th Street and Farrell, were acquired by the redevelopment agency, former redevelopment agency, with affordable funds for the purpose of developing low and very low income housing projects. As you are painfully aware, the redevelopment agency has been dissolved by state law. You have, in your capacity as City Council, accepted the role both of the successor agency, which assists in resolving all of the matters left over that needs to be dealt with, and as the housing successor agency, basically a body that would preside over decisions pertaining to the assets that were acquired or held through the low and moderate income housing. Those two properties would qualify as those assets. The current title of those properties still rests with the Improvement Agency of the City of Grover Beach. What is before you are two resolutions. First one, in your role as a successor agency, authorizing the transfer of those, the title of those properties to the housing successor agency. The second resolution, as a housing successor agency, accepting the transfer of title, both implicitly or actually specifically stated therein, authorize the city manager and the mayor to execute documents that are necessary to finalize the transfer. With that, I'll submit and answer any questions.
Okay, we'll start to my left this time. Questions?
What do we do with the property?
Well, one of the properties, I think the ultimate goal is something that is within the, obviously, the power of the City Council. One of these two properties is the property that has been designated for the 5-unit affordable housing project for Mr. Vernon. As you know, we've had some issues with the state with regard to the validity or invalidity of the agreement, which would have transferred that property to him for development. I think that one of the options is to, once the transfer is concluded, to go before the Oversight Board and have them authorize that transfer. And if they do that, then I think that will put that property into the use that was intended for from the time it was acquired, and consistent with the direction that council gave with regard to the affordable housing. The second piece of property, again, it is an asset that doesn't belong to the city. It belongs to the, technically speaking, the state at this point in time. Oversight Board can be petitioned, for lack of a better word, or a project pertaining to that piece of property can be put before the Oversight Board consistent with your direction. And if the Oversight Board approves that project, whatever that is, then that property can be used for that purpose. Otherwise, it may end up having to be liquidated with the funds being returned to the state.
Thanks.
No questions?
No question.
Then, so I guess I have one. And so, any property that the redevelopment agency may have purchased from the city, say if we had purchased the garden, it would that have been in the same predicament?
Only properties. Well, at this point in time, it's only properties that were purchased with low and moderate income funds.
I see. Okay, so only low and moderate income housing funds. Okay. So if we don't develop this, or we don't come up with a plan that the Oversight Committee thinks is a viable one or is worthy, then it could possibly be sold and the money goes to the
state.
Well,
it would be ordered liquidated and the money returned to the state.
All right, but in either case, we need to change the ownership because the redevelopment agency no longer exists.
Yeah. And one of the steps that needs to be taken, which is all part and parcel of what we were talking about, is within 6 months of receiving a finding of completion, the city is obligated to... Actually, I'll take that back. That is not applicable to low and moderate income housing. It's only applicable to other how to dispose of it. There's a long property management plan, and initially in my head I thought that these would be applicable to it, but I will reverse myself. It's only to properties that you mentioned, and that's redevelopment agency properties not acquired with low and moderate income house, and I'm not aware of the city having any of those.
Okay. All right, then. Well, I guess... Since we've opened everything else up to public comment, we've got, is there any public comment? All righty then. We'll bring it back, and I'm looking for a motion.
Okay. Well, I'll make a motion that the City Council, in its capacity as a successor agency, adopt the resolution authorizing the transfer of the properties to the Housing Successor Agency and authorize the mayor to execute both the deeds and any documents necessary to effectuate the transfer.
Thank you. Second, someone?
Second.
Thank you. So we have a first and a second, and this is probably going to mean a roll call. So do we need to want to do these separately?
One at a time. Yeah.
Okay.
Councilmember Marshall.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
And Mayor Bright.
Yes.
And I'll further move that the successor housing agency adopt the resolution accepting ownership of those parcels and authorize the mayor to execute any documents necessary to effectuate the transfer.
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So here we are now at the. We had no pulled consent agenda items. So now we have council committee reports. Let's see. Well, gee, look at that. I'm first. Isn't that amazing? I did have a housing trust fund meeting, but there's things that we'll talk about at a different time. So next on our list is Councilmember Lee.
And I didn't have any committee. Any committees happen until Wednesday of this week?
Great.
So I'll talk about those next time.
That makes me happy. Mr. Marshall?
Mine start Tuesday of this week, so I have none.
Even better. Mr.
Ditto.
Nichols? Well, I'm telling you what, it is my night. Okay.
So I did see Mr. Nichols is on the board agenda for tomorrow to be the alternate to the RAC.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Oh, good show. Excellent. Okay.
Not that it's a report on anything. I just figured you already knew.
Just thought he'd mention it.
Exactly.
That's
just
all.
A jab.
Just in passing. Okay, so now we'll go to city council member items. And this, I guess, was an item that Mayor Peterson had requested, discussion regarding upcoming Brown Act and Public Records Act workshop. And I know when I spoke with Debbie earlier today, she... just wanted to make sure that, first of all, that this workshop be something that is effective, and if there's anything that anybody really wants our city attorney to know, anything in particular that they'd like to know, if there's anything that's you just got to have information on.
I have a couple of questions, if I may, Mayor, council members, which may...
That'd
stimulate
great.
A little discussion. First of all, it was my understanding that this was going to be a Brown Act seminar, not a Brown Act and a Public Records Act.
Oh.
So if
that's
your
what the
understanding
title says here. I don't know. I'm just
well,
reading.
Yeah, that was just very recent. Yeah, but I think originally the discussion revolved around the Brown Act.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, I believe it was just the Brown Act. I don't know where.
That was our error, and I apologize for that.
I'm just reading. Martin.
No. Just want to be sure that we all have the same expectations.
That's fine, yes.
Second question that I had, I'm preparing materials and reviewed some of the presentations that I've made and that are available. There's a few new updates. Law has changed on the closed session announcements recently. What is your pleasure? Do you want to listen to me for 2 hours, or do you want to listen to me for 30 minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I can give you one that has 150 slides in it, and it'll go through every single detail of the Brown Act, and we'll be very thorough, but it will be very long.
You're going to get lonely.
That was him. That was my concern.
I mean, we really like you, Martin, and you're very entertaining, but for 2 hours, yeah. I think, you know, what really kind of spurred this on, I think, was because we have two new council members, and, you know, you have people that are trying to solicit their advice, and, you know, you want to be helpful, but sometimes you can get yourself or the city into maybe some hot water. Because you just don't realize that, you know, you're just trying to be helpful, but oftentimes you just can't. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'd really like to see. If maybe you could just kind of give us some guidelines. You know, you have this, maybe some examples, okay. You know, along with the updates to the law and that sort of thing. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. That's good. And maybe extend it on a little bit. I'd like to see some examples of, well, this is what we do. And what sort of pitfalls have previous council members, without naming names,
for public across? Record.
Well, we don't need to expand But some examples would be good of, you know, what should we be watching out for, given what we do and where we're doing
it. Okay.
I guess I have a question on that. This is spurred partially by social media. And the only reason I say that is because the Arroyo Grande Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce has actually put out a notice on Facebook that we're going to be having this event. They said we were going to be discussing it tonight and kind of setting the parameters for that, and invited folks, obviously not necessarily tonight, but they did mention the date of the 26th. It'll remains to be seen how many people will come forward on the 26th for that. But I think in towards that end, I think they were kind of hoping that members of the public would come by, potentially media would come by as they attempt to contact us, and so that we can have some conversation as to how either we communicate with the media or how we direct staff to communicate on behalf of the city, the appropriate communication path of travel, shall we call it. I think that may be where that thought might have been going. So.
Okay.
I may have just confused the heck out of everybody.
No, I mean that, you know, the
that could be helpful
POI
as well.
Or how information is distributed on behalf of the city is a separate issue from the Brown Act. We can talk a little bit about it, and I don't know how many people will be expecting to cover that in any detail, but we'll find out. I mean, we can certainly address it. If that is an issue that becomes a point of conversation.
This chamber is going to be full of people.
I am expecting that. Yeah.
But I can see where really those would be two things really that would need to be addressed on separate occasions, because we could be here forever.
Well, and it's kind of why I brought it up, because it's kind of been thrown out into the ether, just from a, I don't know if from a desire standpoint by the chamber, but it's I don't know again how much of that ball is going to roll forward or downhill, but we may get some people that are anticipating a small conversation.
And I look forward to the chamber presentation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, has I know it's we're inviting the other commissions and other members. Has we received good RSVP'd?
As far as I know, we've got an indication that the Parks and Rec Commission will attend, okay. And Planning Commission. So
good. Excellent. So do you have enough information?
I do for my purposes. If there's anything else, this
anything
would be
else
probably
you
the best
gentlemen
time.
Gentlemen want to add yeah. to that?
No, if I think of something, I'll email it.
Okay, mm-hmm. That'll be good.
And I'll do it as a
Bill?
Chain email.
That's right. Yeah,
make, yeah, sure. make sure you do that so we can all get involved in that discussion. That'll be great.
Madam Mayor, you have someone in the public that would like to comment, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Wait, hold on. Hold on just a moment, please. Thank goodness we've got our runner over there. You don't have to go to the gym tonight.
Thanks.
No, my comment was, in view of the grand jury findings, did you want to fold that into this workshop? You wouldn't have had the opportunity, except tonight was postponed. So,
well, we will discuss that when we discuss that report. Thank you.
I was just thinking maybe staff would need advance notice on it.
Okay, thank you. So now we're anxiously awaiting any city manager reports and comments.
Yeah, I actually have one.
Fabulous.
Won't take long. But I did want you all to know that this afternoon or late this morning, I gave a brief interview on KCOY TV relative to the West Grand Avenue improvements. Really, it was in the absence of the mayor. She usually takes the lead in doing the media contacts. But since she was not available, I took that and just wanted to let you know that it was positive. From my perspective, the interchange was positive. And if we adjourn the meeting at a civil hour, you may want to take a look at it.
Thank you. We will, by the way.
It'll be very critical.
City Attorney, reports and comments? Anything?
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. Another request for direction, for lack of a better word, or raising the past. At one point in time, I was directed to bring before you an anti-nepotism policy, basically in brief, a policy wherein people who are close to each other, related to each other, do not supervise each other or promote each other, etc. That item has been before the council twice now over the last 8 years without any traction. And when I say that, I mean I did not receive a direction, you know, yes, bring it back. We want to adopt a policy. We want to work with it, and we want to do something with it. It was on our list of things that were pending and incomplete, and I would just like to either to get direction from you. Do you want to just bury it and not worry about it, or do you want staff to return it to you for a resolution adopting a policy?
Is it appropriate to ask a question?
Absolutely.
Well, sure.
Then I have two. Do we have an issue with it currently?
No.
Within
City Hall? I am unaware of, and without violating personnel issues,
exactly,
or anything, I'm unaware of any current issues.
Okay. Secondly, is it required by state law?
It is not.
Okay.
Any comments? Over here to the right.
Drop it.
I'm in support of that.
I would be too. Just, I'm looking at our city manager. Is there any reason to have this on our books?
Not at this time.
Drop it.
Okay, then I guess it's a general consensus to just never mind at this time.
Yeah, unless you have a strong opinion that it will sway us.
I don't.
Okay.
All righty then. So at this point in time, we're going to move into closed session. We have pulled one of the items, and our city attorney has already noted what those items are. So we'll just move on into those, and then we'll come back out and announce the closed session announcements when we're done.
Yeah, just for the record, we will be meeting on items 1 and 3, 1 being the labor negotiations with all employee groups, and number 3, or the second one, will be the city manager's evaluation.
Very good, and we've pulled the conference with real property negotiators. Thank you.